your opinion about those two guys over there, standing in that group of four by the coffee table? Now, two of them asked me to dinner next week. I told them to call me. See the one with the buttoned-up suit, the one with the crossed feet, his hand in his pocket, holding a glass? He's a litigation attorney, too, and I suppose we could discuss our cases together. The other one's the one with the open jacket, the one standing with his hands on his hips. See him? He's a buyer at Bloomingdale's. Nice guy. Kind of sweet. And, well, sweet. The third guy with his hand over his mouth, peering over his glasses? Mm-mm. No, avoid him. He's a real argumentative type. Anyway, I rather like the Bloomies buyer. I really don't know why, actually. What do you think? Maybe I'll get a discount?
Do you know the clues which can make reading people easy and make you feel like life is giving you a discount? In this program, we'll explore the language that exists beyond words, the language of the body and its gestures. This is the silent language that tells you what people are thinking, which, you'll agree, can often be quite different from what they're saying. In this program, we'll teach you how to read this nonverbal language, evaluate it, and how to use it to your benefit both personally and professionally. We're going to give you actual tools to get beneath the surface of people's words, to understand precisely what they mean. Not only will this help you to relate more effectively, but it'll help you to get what you want from people. How? It can help you to negotiate more successfully, to close sales, and to win arguments. You'll learn to understand the visual signals that tell you when you're close to agreement or when you should change strategies in order to get what you want. You'll be able to tell whether you're being lied to, how boredom and defensiveness are revealed, and how to overcome both. You can see how valuable it is to increase your sensitivity to this nonverbal language. You'll understand other people's motivations and attitudes, and you'll also be able to ensure that your nonverbal communication is saying what you want it to. Why is understanding body language so important to know about? Because gestures which make up the vocabulary of body language are the signals people use to communicate their instinctive reactions. These instinctive reactions reflect the attitudes you have to deal with in your relations with others. Attitudes of openness that respond positively to you, or defensive attitudes that respond negatively. We're going to help you to learn the language of gestures that reveals these attitudes in the following ways. First, we'll show you which single gestures express specific emotional attitudes and reactions. Secondly, we'll group these gestures into more complex groups and teach you how to unravel their meanings. And third, we'll show you what to do about the insights you'll gain from this new awareness. The material for this program is based on the popular paperback, How to Read a Person Like a Book, written by Gerard Nirenberg and Henry Calero. Mr. Nirenberg is an attorney, president of the Negotiation Institute, and the author of several books on the art of negotiating. Mr. Calero is a business executive and consultant specializing in the techniques of successful negotiation. What both their book and this program will prove to you is that verbal exchange doesn't just take place in a vacuum. Instead, it's a complex process of communicating with other people, involving words and body movements that we need to become aware of. It's important to realize that the nonverbal communication between people is as crucial, if not more so, than the actual words that are spoken in a conversation. It's often the case that the gestures a person uses while talking contradict the actual words he's using. In fact, studies have shown that nonverbal gestures are likely to be more truthful and reliable indicators of a person's actual feelings than the words he's saying. Since we all use this second language every day of our lives when we're relating to others, we'd better find out what this language can say about ourselves as well as others. As we begin to describe the various categories of individual gestures, do keep in mind that an isolated gesture is like a single word. It can be defined all by itself, but its true meaning can only be fully understood in the context in which it's used. That is, the complete sentence formed by the other gestures and verbal language that accompany it.
In any communication between people, the first thing that happens is the formation of an instinctive mental reaction to what's being said or done.
It's this reaction or attitude that we immediately signal to others by gestures. We can classify attitudes very broadly in two basic groups: attitudes of openness, which are positive reactions, and attitudes of defensiveness, which are negative reactions. Let's begin our examination of single gestures by describing some open attitudes you're likely to come across in your dealings with people and the gestures that communicate them. Cooperation and agreement, willingness, enthusiasm, appraisal, and sincerity. These are all open attitudes. They all express a willingness to meet the situation positively and openly. Gestures that convey openness all expose the body and imply the speaker trusts the person she's speaking to. They all communicate yes in varying degrees. Therefore, they're usually obvious, meant to be seen. The most obvious gesture of openness is the open hands gesture. Spread your own hands now. Open them, palms up. You can see that it can mean several things depending on the context of the situation, but all of them are related by a willingness to meet the situation. Other gestures of openness that are often seen when negotiations are going well and agreement is near are uncrossing the arms or legs, moving forward, and unbuttoning the jacket. Enthusiastic readiness to cooperate can be seen when a person puts his hands on his hips and stands with his feet apart. It's the stance of the high achiever, the go-getter. Sincerity or honesty is signaled when you place your open palms on your chest. You're reinforcing the sincerity of your feelings. And what does rubbing your palms together signal? Yes, eagerness and expectancy. Another open attitude is appraisal. When people are appraising you and evaluating what you're saying, you have their attention and interest. The simplest signal of attentiveness and interest is the tilted head. Hand-to-cheek gestures also signal open-minded appraisal before negative judgment sets in. People often evaluate what we're saying by putting the chin in their hand and extending an index finger along the cheek with the rest of the fingers positioned below the mouth. This gesture signals interest and a calm, reasoned, and objective reaction. When you see someone stroking the chin, this person is signaling that he's forming a decision about what you're saying. In either case, you'll know the degree of interest you're getting by noticing whether the person is leaning forward, toward you, or leaning well back, away from you. When we lean forward, we're silently communicating, "I'm with you." When we lean back, we're distancing ourselves from other people's thoughts, usually because we're being critical or evaluating the other person negatively. Confidence is not an attitude we want to hide. Indeed, it's a feeling we want others to notice. The most obvious confidence gesture is direct and simple eye contact. When we're confident, we're unafraid. Steepling signals confidence, too. That's when you put your fingertips together to form a church steeple. Depending on how high up from the lap this gesture is placed, we can tell just how confident the person feels. When it's placed just above the lap, this person's confidence can easily turn to self-doubt. When the hands are placed by the eyes so that you're looking at others through your fingers, you're feeling pretty smug. Be aware, though, that it provokes an uncomfortable and suspicious reaction in others because it looks like you're signaling that you've got something up your sleeve. You'll probably get a defensive attitude and gesture in return. When you see a hand in the jacket pocket from which only the straight-held thumb sticks out, that's a gesture of confidence. Hands laced behind the head is another sign of feeling sure of oneself. If, in addition, your legs are crossed too, again, you're feeling quite smug. That's no longer confidence. That's arrogance. And again, you can usually expect a negative response. The touching gestures of reassurance are open gestures you'll be glad to see in others. Unlike the more hostile touching gestures, which are quick and aggressive, these are calm and deliberate hand movements that are meant to reassure and calm us and to show affection. Acceptance, too, is an open reaction. It's often signaled by moving closer to the other person in a relaxed manner.
And now let's leave our examination of open attitudes and their gestures and turn to our second group of attitudes, defensiveness. The defensive attitudes are all expressed by gestures that shield the body and close it off in some way. all of them say no in one way or another. Resistance is the most obvious such attitude. Others you'll recognize in your relations with people are frustration and anxiety, stubbornness, nervousness, doubt and suspicion, evasiveness, impatience, and a wish to dominate. If the open hands gesture is common to all attitudes of openness, the crossed arms gesture is common to all attitudes of defensiveness. According to Charles Darwin, it's used to signal defensiveness everywhere in the world. Children cross their arms when resisting their parents' instructions. Baseball umpires instinctively cross their arms when they see a furious team manager approaching. And you can see how holding the arms across the chest naturally acts as a protective guard. Because what's underneath those arms? Your heart. Your feelings, of course. It says to others that you've adopted a certain attitude and you're protecting it. Some people cross their arms just to get comfortable, you'll say. Well, if you're in doubt whether it's defensiveness or relaxation that's being communicated, a good way to decide is to notice the hands. Are they relaxed? Or are they clenched in a fist, perhaps? While it's true that many people will also cross their arms while thinking or concentrating, they're still communicating nonverbally that they've withdrawn into themselves in order to block out other things that will interfere with their thinking. The most obvious gestures to look for that signal defensive attitudes are crossed arms, crossed legs and ankles, clenched fists and hidden hands, in pockets or behind the back, for instance, buttoned or closed jackets, and turning the body away from the other person. If you're sitting sideways, did you know you're signaling that you're not able to face the situation squarely? A leg draped over the arm of a chair is another negative signal. Though it may seem relaxed, it's not. It's actually a way for people to show how unconcerned and even hostile they are toward your feelings and needs. It can also show a wish to dominate in certain circumstances. When a person drapes his leg over the side of a chair, his nonverbal message tells us only he has the right to be this relaxed. Straddling a chair is another defensive gesture. People sit this way when they're taking center stage and want you to know it. Now that's an act of dominance and aggression, wouldn't you say? But they're also using the back of the chair as a shield from others. No wonder we get a confused message from the chair straddler. It's because the person himself is confused as to how he wants to relate, defensively or aggressively. All gestures that communicate the need to dominate are basically defensive. The person feels the need to defend his rights. When your boss sits with his feet on his desk, he's defending his right to be superior. Yet another negative attitude, frustration, has its own set of signals. When someone's holding his neck with the palm of his hand, he's showing you his frustration and worry. It's as if he's saying, "This is a pain in the neck." Running the fingers through the hair is an acting out of the feeling, "This is getting in my hair." Clenched hands communicate both frustration and resistance, although the person who's resisting what you're saying is likely to hide them from view altogether. Wringing hands indicate both frustration and anxiety. And the ultimate gesture of frustration, of course, is the jabbing index finger. It's blaming you.
How do you know when what you're saying is being viewed with doubt, or even suspicion? Gestures of doubt, suspicion, and secretiveness all happen quickly, subtly, and surreptitiously. It's as if we try and hide them, but we nevertheless feel compelled to make them. Doubt and uncertainty are most often shown in rubbing or scratching gestures, lightly rubbing or touching the nose, scratching behind or beside the ear. Rubbing of an eye says, "I can't see it," and scratching the head indicates confusion. When doubt has turned to suspicion, we're likely to see people relate to us sideways. They'll give us sideways glances, speak out of the side of the mouth, or move their bodies sideways and give us the cold shoulder. Have you noticed how literally we act out how we feel? How gestures point to specific parts of the body to communicate exactly how we're reacting? Now let's look at the restless signals people communicate when they're nervous and anxious. You fidget when you're nervous and impatient, not just because the chair is uncomfortable.
Some men will tug at their pants and fidget restlessly in a negotiation until agreement is reached. After settlement, their tugging and fidgeting will cease. Clearing the throat signals nervousness if it's done often, as does speaking with a hand covering the mouth. Biting on pencils and playing with paper clips and other objects that we twirl or move in our hands obsessively. When nervousness is consciously suppressed, it becomes an act of self-control. Some gestures of self-control to look for are locked ankles, clenched hands, and a hand gripping the wrist. Tapping feet, drumming fingers, and jingling money in pockets. They're a veritable orchestra of impatient gestures demanding to be noticed. But other gestures of impatience can be very subtle, and we often ignore them, or we don't even notice them because we're so self-involved. These are the interrupt gestures, those that signal others are anxious to interrupt us when we're speaking. The most obvious interrupt gesture is a tentatively raised hand. It's polite. If you ignore this signal, the unrewarded hand will usually find its way to the person's ear and tug at it instead of you. This is the second polite signal that the other person is anxious to interrupt you. If you ignore this gesture, too, the same hand will often find its way to the person's lips. Here, the rigid index finger, or perhaps the whole hand, will seal the lips to prevent them from opening. Now, of course, you force this person to restrain herself. Not a good way for you to relate. If this person insists on speaking, she may have to tug at your sleeve to silence your flow of words, and that will probably annoy you. And that ends our description of a few of the individual gestures you're likely to come across in the communication process. There are many others that you'll come across on your own. You should take the time to analyze them for yourself. To review briefly, remember that it's gestures, rather than words, that are the true indicators of people's instinctive reactions. These reactions can be grouped into broad categories: positive responses, indicated by openness gestures, and negative responses, indicated by closed or defensive gestures. Open gestures all reach out from ourselves to others. They open up the body and are meant to be seen. They're usually slow and deliberate. Defensive gestures, on the other hand, are subtle, closed, and often kept to a scale small enough to hide them from the unobservant or unsophisticated eye.
Are you ready for a short quiz on the gestures you've learned? You'll need a pencil and paper for this. We'll ask you a series of numbered questions to which you should give short, numbered answers. A word or two will do. And when you finish the quiz, we'll turn the cassette over and give you our answers. Are you ready? Number one. If Harry says, "Sure, I'm sure," and then rubs his nose lightly, what is this gesture signaling? Number two. If my boss is leaning back in his chair, looking at me sideways and stroking his chin, is he impressed with my ideas? Number three. Mary clears her throat a lot when she speaks to me in the hallway. What does this mean? Number four. Joe is leaning over the table, gripping his wrist. What does this gesture say about Joe? Number five. My associate always puts her index finger on her lips when I'm speaking. Is she trying to tell me something? Number six. What is being communicated when a person has the palm of his hand on the back of his neck? And now, please turn the cassette over. We will continue on the other side with answers to the quiz, a discussion of groups of gestures, and how to use all of this new knowledge to your benefit. for the answers to our quiz. Are you ready? For number one, Harry's not at all sure that he's sure. Rubbing the nose lightly is a gesture of doubt and confusion, and when it's accompanied by confident words, you can reasonably assume this person's lying. For number two, if your boss is leaning back, looking at you sideways, and stroking his chin, you'd better get new ideas. Your boss is both critical and suspicious of the ones you have. For number three, if Mary clears her throat a lot when she's speaking with you in the hallway, Mary is either nervous about speaking in hallways, nervous about speaking to you, or both. For number four, poor Joe is gripping his wrist in an effort to contain himself, an unconscious exercise in self-control. For number five, if your associate always puts her index finger on her lips when you're speaking, you should follow her example and give her a chance to speak. She's been dying to interrupt you for ages. For number six, the person with the palm on the back of the neck is showing you where his pain is. He's worried, anxious, and in doubt. In this case, you have two ways to remedy the situation. Go away or change the subject. And now that we've explored single gestures and how to relate them to the attitudes you're likely to meet with in your relations with others, let's examine gestures in groups. The fact is, we seldom signal what we mean nonverbally by just one isolated gesture. Just as we don't speak in single words, we actually communicate nonverbally in groups of gestures. These are the phrases which, when read together, form the sentences of our body language. It's these groups of gestures that we can count on to be accurate indicators of people's real reactions to a situation. In this section, we'll be talking about different kinds of gesture groups. There are gestures that are all similar to one another that we group together because they all express or reinforce one attitude or similar attitudes. Other groups of gestures can conflict, either with other gestures being expressed or with the verbal language itself. We'll show you how to sort them out logically so that you can understand the real meaning behind conflicting signals. Then we'll show you how you can use this knowledge to get what you want from people. Let's start with the simple notion that gestures in a group can occur one at a time or simultaneously. An example of a gesture group in which several individual gestures follow one upon the other is the following. You've asked your secretary where the client's financial file is. First, she scratches her head. Then she spreads her hands open, and finally she shrugs and says, "Search me, boss." Before you fire her, did you notice how one gesture followed upon the other, all conveying the same meaning? An example of a group of gestures in which all the gestures happen simultaneously is the following. Your daughter flounces down in a chair and simultaneously crosses her arms and ankles and makes her hands into fists. She says, "I can't clean my room right now because I promised Beth I'd help her with her homework." That's a group of gestures in which all the gestures happen as if they were one. Is there a difference in meaning between the two? Yes. It's a matter of emphasis. Your daughter is making a stronger statement than your secretary. Her simultaneous gestures strongly reinforce her attitude of resistance. She wants to underscore her feelings to make very sure you get her meaning. It's a case, really, of being silently loud and clear. Your secretary's reaction, mere indifference, doesn't need that kind of reinforcement.
Sometimes the body language in a group of gestures all signals the same thing. They all reinforce the same thought, feeling, or attitude, or similar related attitudes. These are related gestures. You saw related groups of gestures in both the daughter's and secretary's nonverbal language. In both cases, we saw gestures that are all related to the verbal response. Let's examine a realistic situation now in which we can observe related groups of gestures. Your personnel manager, John Anderson, is sitting in your office. "I'm very pleased with your performance, John," you say. John moves forward to the edge of his chair and unbuttons his jacket. His feet are apart and his toes are in a sprinter's position. He's literally on his toes, isn't he? He's leaning forward with one hand resting on his thigh, the other on his hip. He's looking directly at you. "Thank you. I'm glad to hear that, sir," he says, smiling. You say, "In fact, I'd say you're in line for a promotion, John. Let's go to lunch and discuss it." You stand up. John stands up too, smiling broadly, and puts his hands on his hips, which opens his jacket further. "Sounds good to me," he says, laughing. With a group of related gestures, all expressing openness attitudes, John conveyed readiness, enthusiasm, eagerness, and friendliness. Each individual gesture reinforces those attitudes. There isn't one gesture in the group that's false, that conflicts with John's openness. Nothing that he signaled nonverbally would make you doubt or question his enthusiasm. His gestures, then, are related and similar to John's inner attitude. "Okay," you say, "that's simple. Well, then, let's examine the more complex groups of conflicting gestures." There are two types of conflicting behavior. One shows a conflict between the gestures and the words being expressed. The other shows a conflict between the gestures themselves, gestures that contradict each other. Let's look at the first one of these types of contradictory behavior, a difference between what's expressed verbally and in gestures. Remember, as we mentioned earlier in this program, when there's a discrepancy between verbal language and nonverbal language, we look to the gestures rather than to the words for what's really meant. It's the more reliable and truthful indicator of a person's inner attitude. A good example of this is the so-called nervous laugh. The sound being made indicates amusement, yet the person who's laughing nervously is extremely uncomfortable. She makes nervous arm and leg movements, and then her entire body shifts as though trying to escape from an unpleasant situation. Usually, if the person has pockets, she will then hide her hands in them. This gesture group is conflicting because the laugh you're hearing is not compatible with the extreme discomfort and nervousness of the body language. What you're hearing, then, conflicts with what you're seeing.
The second type of conflicting behavior concerns gestures themselves. Let's look at a situation in which only one gesture in a group of gestures conflicts with the others. David is waiting in the wings, ready to deliver a speech on stage. He's been sitting with his hands laced behind his head and his legs crossed. He's leaning the chair back against the wall. The stagehand asks him, "Are you ready to go on?" David rises and puts his hands on his hips, his feet apart. "Sure, anytime," he says confidently. Then he lightly rubs his nose. Now that gesture conflicts with all the others. It's the only gesture of uncertainty and doubt in a group of confidence and readiness gestures. Obviously, David feels well prepared. His hands were laced behind his head. His legs were crossed. He was leaning back. All these gestures indicate supreme confidence, if not smugness. He's also communicated confidence with his voice tone, his verbal reply, and his readiness stance, the hands on the hips, feet apart. But touching his nose signals a doubt, an uncertainty. He's obviously slightly apprehensive about what he's going to be doing. He's communicating that he's somewhat of two minds about this, both eager and a little nervous. But because there are six factors pointing to his confidence and enthusiasm, and only one pointing to doubt, you could say he isn't nervous enough to back out. You'd probably guess from the majority of confidence gestures that David's slight nervousness might even make him perform better. That was an example of a group of related gestures containing only one conflicting gesture. Still easy, you say? Then let's give you an example of still more complex conflicting behavior. We'll ask you to do another quiz with us now. We'll read you a scenario from a real-life situation, a couple of sentences at a time, and ask you questions about related and conflicting behavior it describes. It's probably a good idea to write down your answers, so you can compare them to the answers we'll give you at the end of the quiz. Are you ready?
The refrigerator salesman smiled at me. "But of course you can get delivery by Monday," he said.
Would you say the salesman's gesture is related to or in conflict with what he's saying?
He spread his arms, hands open, palms up, and shrugged his shoulders at my concern. Then he buttoned his jacket.
How many related gestures and how many conflicting gestures were just described?
Can we put it in writing on the bill as a condition of sale? I asked sweetly. He folded his arms across his chest. Sure, we can do anything you want, ma'am, he replied.
How would you describe the salesman's gesture in relation to what he's saying?
I noted that his hands were now clenched. The customer's always right, isn't that so? He said. Then he laughed loudly and twisted his body, putting his hands in his pockets.
If there are four conflicting gestures described here, which three actually go together and should be seen as one gesture?
The salesman looked at me sideways. Don't you worry about a thing, little lady, he assured me. Then he turned his back on me.
What two attitudes would you say are described here, and what are the gestures that convey them?
And now for the answers. For the first, the smile is, of course, a related gesture to the assurance of the words. Number two, there is one related gesture described, the open hands gesture, and two conflicting gestures, the shrugging shoulders and the buttoning of the jacket. These two don't fit the verbal assurance just given. They're defensive gestures signaling uncertainty and resistance. Number three. The salesman's crossed arms gesture before saying, sure, we can do anything you want, ma'am, is not only a conflicting gesture, it's a gesture of resistance directly opposed to the verbal assurance he's giving. We'd say he's lying, wouldn't you? Number four. The laugh, the twisting of the body, and the hands in the pockets are all elements of the nervous laugh. They're seen as one gesture. Did you note how the clenched hands and the nervous laugh conflict with the salesman's words, the customer's always right? And for the fifth answer, the sideways look is a gesture of secretiveness. Turning the back on someone is a gesture of resistance, hostility, and dismissal. If someone is doing this and saying, don't worry about a thing, would you believe him? Well, would you buy a refrigerator from this man? If we were to add up the number of the salesman's related gestures and the number of conflicting gestures, we'd find two related gestures in this conversation and seven gestures conflicting with what's being verbally communicated. It isn't hard to make a decision based on such reasoned facts, is it? If you missed any related or conflicting gestures in our scenario, why not replay it? It's important to learn to recognize gestures and groups of gestures for similarity and opposition to what's being verbally communicated. Like any other learning, it takes practice to become aware of gestures and groups of gestures and to learn to categorize them. But remember this, the better you become at it, the more you'll benefit from it. And here are some other ways for you to practice developing your ability to recognize gestures in your everyday life. First, watch for your own gestures and the ones you use to relate to others. Become aware of your own defensiveness gestures when you're in a stressful situation. Remember, it's likely to be the openness gestures that will help you get what you want. Second, set aside at least 10 minutes of your day for watching other people's gestures. The more you become aware of people's gestures, the better you'll relate to them. Study people's facial gestures, walking gestures, and handshakes, too. They're good material for gesture reading. Third, watch television with the sound turned off. Television offers wonderful material for reading nonverbal communication. Watch the interview and discussion programs particularly. Try to understand what's happening just from watching the picture. Then check your accuracy at reading gestures by turning the sound on at regular intervals. Examining other people's behavior could keep you busy for the rest of your life. It's a book without end. One of the benefits of focusing your attention on other people when you're relating is that your increased understanding of people's real feelings can only raise your own tolerance level when others seem to make communicating difficult. Now that you've learned some of the basic structures of the nonverbal language of gestures, we'd like to provide you with a model situation and method for using this knowledge to get what you want in your interaction with others.
You're negotiating to buy your first property, a modest summer cottage. In the room with you are your lawyer and the seller, Bill Hogan. Only a short while ago, you found out the seller also owns the 2 acres bordering the property you're buying. Since you love privacy, probably more than most people, you now also want those extra 2 acres. Bill refuses to sell the adjoining parcel. He wants to give it to his daughter one day, but it's exactly what you want, so you're holding out for it. Things look deadlocked, and your lawyer isn't helping at the moment either. You notice that Bill has stopped smoking, although he's a heavy smoker. You know that means he's feeling things have reached a crisis point. Even heavy smokers stop smoking when they feel in a crisis mode. You see his clenched hands, his crossed arms and legs, and 1 foot swinging furiously. He looks like a time bomb about to go off. How is he going to resolve the crisis he's feeling? By walking out? You decide to forestall that possibility by diffusing the situation. You have to get this man to relax a little, or neither of you will get what you want. You decide to ask Bill about his daughter, the cause of the stalemate. You move forward in your chair and lean over the conference table. You tilt your head. Then you open your hands in an appeal gesture and say, "Tell me about your daughter, Bill. Is she planning to build on the adjoining parcel in the near future?" Bill tells you that his daughter's been studying abroad for several years. Next year, she plans to join the Peace Corps for 2 years. As you speak to him, with gestures displaying openness, receptivity, and interest, Bill uncrosses himself. He leans forward and lights a cigarette. Something has changed. The crisis is over for him. He now strokes his chin as he speaks of his daughter. Then he moves forward even further to the edge of his chair. He takes off his jacket. Although it's hot in the room, he's managed to keep his jacket on all through the crisis. You know it signals agreement. Your own openness has been communicated. It's helped Bill relax. It's allowed him to rethink the situation more clearly. By encouraging him to speak about the obstacle standing in the way of the sale, you've made him aware of something that hadn't occurred to him before. His daughter will probably not be around for years to come to enjoy those 2 acres. He's decided to sell you both the cottage and the land. And how did you get what you wanted? By recognizing a crisis. You diffused it and the stalemate it created by changing tack and by remaining open.
And that really is how simple it can be to get what you want from others. Awareness of gestures leads to a recognition and knowledge of the real reaction of others when words don't or can't. It gives you the basis of understanding others from which you can make reasoned choices as to how your own behavior can change the situation to your benefit. We've now given you the tools you need in order to recognize the nonverbal language that all of us use in our communication with other people. With this recognition of the basic gestures, you are now in a position to develop a sophisticated understanding of other people's attitudes and motivations. This new power will increase your chances of negotiating with business associates and with friends and partners in a more sensitive way. The complexities of human behavior are truly fascinating.